Welcome to the South Cars Outreach Program. Join our training session in progress.
Well, good evening, everyone. This is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, and I want to welcome you to the Outreach Program sponsored by the South Coast Amateur Radio Service this evening. This program has been established to help those wishing to learn more about our hobby and further assist those wishing to upgrade a license status. This will be an in-depth course pertaining to what one should know when studying for an extra class license. This course will be conducted with two sessions weekly, which will be at 7 p.m. 2300 Zulu each Tuesday and at 7 p.m. 2300 Zulu each Sunday evening. For those that are already licensed and wish either a refresher course or would just like to listen, please connect to our SCARA server at either EchoLink node number 96140 or IRLP node 9614. For those who are interested, please contact Mike KD0CDQ via email at VOIP@voipnet.southcars.com to enroll in the course and be given directions as to the study material required and the manner you will be connecting into the course. The material being presented is formulated from data obtained from the ARRL and is simply being forwarded in a presentation format by SCARS. Should anyone take issue to some of the technical statements made, and in keeping with not interrupting the class and session, please convey your comments or suggestions to the Outreach Program at, once again, VOIP@voipnet.southcars.com. Let me pause for a moment. It should be mentioned that this course covers only the requirements pertaining to the United States Part 97 rules and does not include other requirements that may be found in foreign countries. Should any other country other than the United States wish to have their own licensing sessions on this server, please drop us an email at, once again, VOIP@voipnet.southcars.com. The session this evening will be recorded and posted on our website at www.voip.southcars.com. Now, please note, for all of the class members and instructors, and it's extremely important that we all stay on the same page during these classes. The only question pool and copy thereof that should be used when participating in this class should be the one found posted on our website. Publications from other sources may or may not be current and should not be used during our sessions. So now, do we have any emergency or out-of-the-ordinary business that needs to be handled before we start this evening's program? Hearing no emergency traffic, I always say that's a great thing. So once again, everyone, classmate and class members and South Cars, I want to welcome you to the Outreach Extra course. I believe this is the eighth class this evening. And at this point, we're going to go ahead and begin. I understand, Rick, you are beginning this evening. And by the way, our two instructors are Mike, KD0CDQ from Olathe, Kansas, and NC5IR, not sure where you're from, Friendship, Texas, or up there in Illinois. But Rick, I'm going to throw it your direction so you can begin this evening's session with your first question. So NC5IR from Kilo 6 Sierra United November, it's all yours.
Well, thank you, Kathy, for that wonderful introduction. I am currently in Pearland, Texas, right next door to Friendswood, Texas. We're located a little south of Houston, a little north of Galveston, right on the wonderful, very humid Gulf Coast. All right. Well, hello, greetings, everyone. Again, I'm honored to be participating in this class and participate as an instructor. I'm very unworthy for such a title, but since I do have my license and have gone through this, I know what it's like to study for these questions, and I would love to do anything I can help those listening to do that. Let me read the question, and then I'll pause and then read the answer. We are starting with Echo 7 Alpha 02, E7A02. Question is, what is the function of a decade counter digital IC? What is the function of a decade counter digital IC? Let me take a break. The answer is, it produces one output pulse for every 10 input pulses. A decade counter is one that counts in decimal digits rather than binary. All right, keeping in mind the DEC as the beginning of the word decade and also decimal, it counts in decimal digits rather than binary, which is 2. It counts from 0 to 9 and then resets to 0. The counter output can be set to 0 by pulsing the reset line low. The count then increments on each clock pulse until it reaches decimal 9. Starting with 0, going to 9, that's 10 places. And that's the basis of our numbering system, the base 10 numbering system. Are there any questions? All right, hearing no questions or comments, I'll pass it on to Mike. Take it away, Mike.
Hi, thank you, Rick, and good evening, everybody. This is KD0CDQ in Olathe, Kansas, about 23 miles southwest of Kansas City, Missouri. The question I will be working with now is Echo 7 Alpha 07. It's a short one, but it's one that we've got to get it straight in our mind. The question reads, what logical operation does a NAND gate perform? An NAND gate, what does it perform? The answer in this case is delta. Remember, the ABCDs, the alpha designator, changes on different tests. But in this case, the answer is delta. It produces logic 0 at its output only when all input logics are 1. Now, I mentioned the zeros and ones the other night. To explain that a little bit, the output is false when it's a 0. Okay, a 0 is a false. And if both inputs are true, which is a 1, otherwise the output is true. So again, on that one, just watch that you don't get confused with the logic 0 and the logic 1s. So on that one, an NAND gate performs. It performs the logic 0 at its output only when all inputs are logic 1s. Are there any questions on this one? Okay, I made a comment to Gordon before we started. The questions aren't really difficult, but they're a little twisty to me. And Gordon said they're just throwing everything at us on this exam, on this test. So watch the wording. Please watch your wording. Okay, I'm throwing it back over to Rick. Go ahead, Rick. It's all yours.
Thank you, Mike. All right, the next one I have two in a row here. The next one is Echo 7 Alpha 10. E7A10. What is a truth table? What is a truth table? In this listing, it's letter C is where the correct answer is. A list of inputs and corresponding outputs for a digital device. So that's a very simple answer. It goes with a truth table. A list of inputs and corresponding outputs for a digital device. This question somewhat speaks for itself. Think of a truth table to be like a specification sheet. It tells you what combination of inputs produce what at the device output. All right, simple, straightforward answer and comment. Any questions? All right, now let's continue on to my next one. That would be Echo 7 Bravo 03. Which of the following components form the output of a Class D, D as in Delta, amplifier circuit? Which of the following components form the output of a Class D amplifier circuit? The correct answer in this list is A low-pass filter to remove switching signal components. A low-pass filter to remove switching signal components. A Class D amplifier, or switching amplifier, is an electronic amplifier in which the amplifying devices, transistors usually, mostly, operate as electronic switches and not as linear gain devices as in other amplifiers. All right. Any questions on that? Hearing no questions, I'll pass it on to Mike for his next question.
Thank you, Rick. The question that's going to be up is Echo 7 Bravo 09. Now, I'm going to be doing three questions in a row. I'm going to emphasize some wording in these questions because this is one of them that's very wordy to me. It's hard for me to grasp without reading it a few times. I'm going to let it drop and then I'll read the question. Again, Echo 7 Bravo 09. The question reads, which of the following describes how the loading and tuning capacitors are to be adjusted when tuning a vacuum tube RF power amplifier that employs a Pi network output circuit? Okay, now I'm not going to read all the answers because it'll just confuse us. On our test, this is the delta answer, the D. And the answer to that question is the tuning capacitor is adjusted for minimum plate current and loading capacitor is adjusted for maximum permissible plate current. The adjustments are interactive, so the procedure is usually performed several times to reach the optimum setting. Please be careful on this because when I look at these selections, if I was to read each one of them, I might get confused. So watch yourself. It starts with the tuning capacitor is adjusted to minimum plate current, and the loading capacitor is adjusted to the maximum permissible plate current. All I can do is emphasize that minimum and maximum and starting with tuning first, so hope you catch that. Are there any questions on this one, please?
Six, Victor Mike.
Go right ahead, Gordon.
You know, in the old days, before we had all transistorized transceivers, well, we normally had probably a combination of transistors and tubes in the final. And the old rigmarole that everybody learned very quickly is you peak the grid, you dip the final, and you maximize the antenna tuning. The point I wanted to make here is that in your wording, that is very, very important, it says you go to minimum plate current, which is resonance, okay? But when you go to maximum plate current on the antenna side, the permissible means, and this is very important to remember, that you don't want to exceed the current rating of the device that you're using, the tube or transistor. Normally a tube may say that the peak average current should not exceed maybe 250 mils, as an example. So you can probably load in excess of that with that capacitor, that antenna tuning capacitor. But you don't want to do that because you're pushing the tube too hard. You're going to shorten its life, etc., etc. So permissible means try and find out and keep that in your mind, what that current reading should be for the device you're using. Back to you, Mike, KY6V.
Thank you, Gordon, for that insight. Very good. Does anyone have any questions on this one? Please go now. Okay, we're moving right along. I've got the next question, which is Echo 7 Bravo 17, a B17. Echo 7 B17. Now, on this one, it reads, what are odd order rather than even order intermodulation distortion products of concern in linear power amplifiers? Now again, I'll read it again. Why are odd order rather than even order intermodulation distortion products of concern in linear power amplifiers? The answer in this one is the alpha, because they are relatively close in frequency to the desired signal. Because they're relatively close in frequency to the desired signal. Now, the intermodulation distortion, which is abbreviated IMD, it's a type of interference that results from the unwanted mixing of two strong frequencies. And often they abbreviate that as intermode, which is I-N-T-E-R-M-O-D. That's from a glossary to get what that actually means. See, the higher the harmonics that are combined, the weaker the product. This means that the lower odd order intermodulation product, specifically third order, are more likely to cause interference to signals near the desired transmitting signal. Frequency, I'm sorry. So, if there's any questions on this one, please go now.
Hey, Mike, do you have any example of intermod? I've always heard that a certain brand of radio that I have is notorious for picking up intermod.
Maybe Gordon can help you with that. Can you give him an example of that, please? Because I don't know offhand.
Yeah, okay. I'm sorry I had stepped away from the equipment here momentarily, but who was the question from, Mike? And I understand an example for intermod, over.
I think it was Rick. I think NC5IR. Is that correct?
Yes, I've been told that a certain brand that I'm not mentioning, a radio that I own, is notorious for picking up intermod.
Okay, well, let me grab it here. Hi, Rick, again. KY6V. Well, there's lots of examples. And there's a lot of ways that can create intermod. Probably the most that you would run into is that it is a mixing action between two other frequencies. Now, let me give you an example. If another transmitter, let's say he's 50 kc away from you or better, is transmitting, his second harmonic, if it's not reduced where it should be, can beat to the second harmonic of your transmitter frequency, producing one of two additional frequencies, either the sum or the difference, okay? Two frequencies mixing together will create the sum of the two or the difference of the two. Now, that's probably the first one that you're going to run into. Second and third order harmonics, the second and third harmonics are areas that the first place you want to look at. Rick, are you having this problem more on VHF or UHF than you are on the HF band? Because there are intermod products that can be produced within your equipment itself. Over.
Well, my experience is driving down the road or the highway, and all of a sudden the squelch is broken, and you don't hear anything. And I understood that that was because something like electronic device on the street, or maybe power cables or transformers there along electrical wires are creating some sort of a signal that actually breaks the squelch on my VHF side of the radio and causes it to sound like it's trying to come through. And I've been told that my brand of radio that starts with the letter I is notorious for that sort of reception.
Well, I don't know. I've had a lot of iRadios, not necessarily so. I won't give the name to anybody, but I'm sure that they already know what it is. That's quite possible, Rick. It could be something coming in from the neighborhood. Let me ask you this question. I don't want to tie the net up, but or the class up. If the squelch breaks, and you also hear, let's say you're tuned to a repeater frequency, and you hear the repeater, does the offending signal, can you hear that on top of or in between the normal signal you want to receive? Over.
No, as I'm thinking and recalling, it's just something that causes the squelch to break. So if you're scanning different repeaters, or if you're just scanning through the frequencies, then all of a sudden it picks up some kind of a signal. It doesn't necessarily come through the speaker, but it does break the squelch and acts like some sort of a transmitter coming through. It's no big deal. It's just something you get used to. That's all. Back to you.
Yeah, first thing I do is reach down and turn the squelch a little bit more to the right. Good luck on that, Rick. Go ahead, Mike, KY6V.
Thank you, Gordon, for that high-tech answer. This is the South Coast Amateur Radio Service, and we're doing the extra class this evening. We're doing some questions in there. If you want to listen along, come on along with us. We're now going into a different section, Echo 7 Charlie, which discusses filters and matching networks, types of networks, types of filters, filter applications, filter characteristics, impedance matching, and DSP filtering. That is a mouthful of stuff. Okay, the question I'm going to be handling is Echo 7 Charlie 01. Now, this is one that's kind of wordy. I've got a lot of answer, but I'm going to cut the answer short. But let me read the question. It's a very wordy answer to me. Question reads, how are the capacitors and inductors of a low-pass filter, PI network, arranged between the network's input and output? I want to read it again before I do the answer. How are the capacitors and inductors of a low-pass filter, PI network, arranged between the network's input and output? Let it drop, and I'll come back. Now, again, we don't want to stay with these alphanumerics because they will be changed on your test, possibly. The answer in this case is the delta. Now, watch this. What I noticed with the answers, the answer is a capacitor is connected between the input and ground. Another capacitor is connected between the output and ground. And an inductor is connected between input and output. Now, that's pretty clear. Watch this question, because the alpha and the bravo answers have the word two, T-W-O. I think because they are using capacitors and inductors, capacitors is plural, so the mind thinks two. Watch you don't get tripped on that one. So I would just advise you that we're talking about a capacitor and an inductor. We're not talking about two capacitors or two inductors. So how are the capacitors and inductors of a low-pass filter PI network arranged between the network's input and output? Again, it's the delta. A capacitor is connected between the input and ground. Another capacitor is connected between the output and ground. And an inductor is connected between the input and the output. Now, I'm just going to give you a short answer from all that I found about these. A low-pass filter is a filter that passes signals with a frequency lower than a certain cutoff frequency, and attenuates signals with frequencies higher than the cutoff frequency. The amount of attenuation for each frequency depends on the filter design. The filter is sometimes called a high-cut filter or treble-cut filter in audio applications, or they can be called a low-pass filter, is the opposite of a high-pass filter. That's logical. A band-pass filter is a combination of a low-pass and a high-pass filter. I'm not going to read any more. I read quite a bit on this because I was getting thrown around on this question. So watch yourself. If you get this one and you got it in your mind, goody, goody, you got it down. Are there any questions about Echo 7, Charlie 01?
Yeah, a comment from N2CHI.
Yeah, go ahead, Dave. Go ahead with that comment.
I was just thinking that this is pretty easy if you think of what pi is. You know, the mathematical symbol pi is a horizontal line with two legs, and all of the answers have only three components. So the only one that works in that picture of a pi is the correct answer.
That is helpful, David. Thank you, Dave. That is helpful. Think of the pi symbol and think of this question. That's good. Okay, I'm going to throw, if there's not any questions, I'm going to wait a moment, and then we'll throw it over to Rick. Are there any questions on this answer? Okay, I'm going to send it over to Rick. Rick, you've got it wherever you are, somewhere on this planet. Oh, I know, you're between Houston and Galveston. Okay, go right ahead, Rick.
All right, Mike, thank you. That was a very good comment. I believe it was Dave. Appreciate that. All right, next question I have is Echo 7 Delta 01, E7D01. What is one characteristic of a linear electronic voltage regulator? What is one characteristic of a linear electronic voltage regulator? The answer on this list that we have is letter D, delta. The conduction of a control element is varied to maintain a constant output voltage. The conduction of a control element is varied to maintain a constant output voltage. The output of the regulator normally feeds the base of a pass transistor or transistors. By controlling the base voltage, the voltage and current through the pass transistors can be maintained at the desired level. The output of the regulator normally feeds the base of the pass transistor or transistors. By controlling the base voltage of the voltage and current through the pass transistors can be maintained at the desired level. Any questions on that one? All right, hearing no questions or comments, I'll pass it on to Mike.
Okay. Fellas and girls, with your third hand, if you want to pull out the figures, you know the diagrams that we get with this exam, we're going to be looking at figure ECHO 7-3. This is the only question I think we have to look at the figures, but if you want to dig it out, figure E7-3. Okay, the next question we're going to cover is ECHO 7 Delta 06, and it reads, what is the purpose of Q1 in the circuit shown in figure ECHO 7-3. Now, if you've got that out, you can look at that Q1. What it does, it increases the current handling capacity of the regulator. Now, the power transistors are available that will handle several amperes of current at several hundred volts, but linear regulators of this type are usually operated below 100 volts. Regulators using pass transistors have much better current handling capacity than those of simple Zener shunt regulators. Now, if you look at the diagram, I'm not going to try to describe it to you. When you get a chance, look at that diagram. That's the Q1, and that's what we're talking about in this question. Is there any comments on that question? Go ahead now, please.
Yeah, 6 Victor with a comment, sir.
Go right ahead, Gordon.
Yeah, I think besides looking at Q1, which is really the pass transistor, you also want to look at D1. D1 is a Zener diode, and that is keeping the bias onto the base of that Q1 where it should be to keep the voltage where we want the output to be. Okay, there's some filtering and other stuff that's in there, but that D1 is really the guy. It's clamping down. It says, I want this regulator, this pass transistor Q1, to operate this way, and that's its purpose. If that makes any sense, Mike, KY6V, over.
Yes, and as I've commented in past years, when you look at the Zener shunt regulator, to me, it looks like a little dancing girl. Zener is a little girl, and she's got one arm up and one arm down. And I see a comment in the text box. I understand Diana is having a hard time understanding. This is, to me, deep, as I mentioned to Gordon before the class started. It's not that it's heavy material. It's just that the wording is such that it makes it complicated. Diana, is there any way, if you want to come on, any way we could help you with these questions, with the explanations? Go ahead now, if you wish, Diana. Well, possibly she doesn't have any ears to hear this. But it is true. To me, I also have a hard time understanding this. So I have to read the questions and the answers over and over. And then I look around on the Internet at different ways of trying to understand things. That just complicates it more for me, actually. But I get myself involved looking at various ways of understanding. If you're finding that these are pretty complicated to you, they are. The answers are hard to me, the wording. So try in your mind's eye to put the question and the answer together. Again, as I tell you, the brain will hold it. If we implant it there, you know, just like if we impress it on our mind, it'll be there. So with these questions that are kind of difficult to understand, yeah, they are, because we don't have the material. We're not working with the item. So all of us are hands-on, or with our eyes we learn, hands and eyes. But in this case, we've got to just learn with our ears. And it is true, we're only using one of our senses. But hang in there, Diana. I would work more with trying to get the Q and the A together. Like I always say, we don't really learn how to drive till after you get a license. Then you learn all the ins and the outs about your vehicle and the other vehicles and how people manage the highway. And the same with this. You actually got to see it to actually know, and we're not looking at it here. Okay, I'm going to pause, and I'm going to do my next question. The next question is Echo 7 Delta 09. I wish I could make it simpler for you, but I don't know what to do on that. Okay, on Echo 7 Delta 09, what is the main reason to use a charge regulator, a charge controller, with a solar power system? And it's to prevent the battery damage due to overcharging. Now, this is some batteries. I'm into batteries a lot, so I kind of look at too much of this. So what's the main reason to use a charge controller with a solar-powered system? It's to prevent the battery damage due to overcharging. So I always put, I have a little shut deal I put in there to keep it. Now, on a lead-acid battery, they will be damaged if overcharged, or their voltage pushed too high by continuing to charge with a high charge voltage. Now, on our HTs, you know, handy talkies, they tend to cut off when they're full powered, but they get awful hot. If you're charging one of those and you're laying it on a counter, you'll feel that radio is hot during the charge. Now, I don't like that. So therefore, it's necessary to connect the controller, which we don't have, between a solar panel and a battery. Now, we're not, see, with solar panels and batteries, what this question is about, but I was just mentioning with our HTs when we're charging them on 110. When charging from a battery from a low state, it will effectively connect to the solar panel to the battery until a certain preset voltage is achieved. This voltage may be sometimes approaching 30 volts for a 24-volt system. You know, it might get more than it needs. A fully charged 24-volt battery may be around 25.5 volts. Actually, our car batteries are 13, even though they advertise a 12. But this is for the battery that has been rested, not one that is being charged. Therefore, although the controller may disconnect the solar panel before the voltage of 30 volts is reached in order to avoid battery damage, the batteries are likely to be fully charged at this point. For this reason, the controller will then connect the charge impulses to full charge to fully charge the battery. And one more little couple sentences here. Charging voltage should be lower for gel-type lead-acid batteries and should also be lower for batteries at a higher temperature. A charge controller may be able to be programmed for a particular type of battery and may also have the facility for a battery temperature sensor. So we're talking here about with solar panels. Yes, usually when you buy a solar panel, probably always, mine are, they come with a charge controller. Use it. Don't bypass it, because you can get items pretty hot and do some damage. Are there any questions on this one, Echo 7 Delta 09? Go ahead, please, if you do. I think Jim and Rebecca, are you trying to come aboard? Over? Okay, I'll let that go. Okay, I'm going over to Rick, and Rick's got a whole bunch to do here. He's got a few of them. Okay, Rick, take it away.
All right. Thank you, Mike. You know, we had the one comment there that the lady was having trouble understanding this, and I really understand what you're going through. I had to learn all this stuff to pass the test, and I haven't dealt with it much since. So this, a lot of these things are foreign to me still, but it's just a matter of learning and memorizing and associating the answers, the correct answers, with the question. But this next question is something that I can relate to, and I think a lot of people can, because if you want to set up a radio, you need a power supply. And I think most all the radios work off of 12 volts, so there has to be something that will change the 110 power at the wall to the power that the radio requires. And so that's why we deal with high voltage power supplies and the older ones and so forth. In fact, in my technician and general class that I took, which was sponsored at church, we actually had a project where we built a power supply. So one of the first things I did was build a power supply. Even though I only did what the guy said, do this and do that and do the other, I actually built my first power supply, so some of this stuff does mean something. Let me make a break, and I'll get to the question. All right, my next question. Echo 7 Delta 10, D7D10. What is the primary reason that a high-frequency switching-type high-voltage power supply can be both less expensive and lighter in weight than a conventional power supply. And I relate to that because I got a power supply at a ham swap meet, and the thing weighed about 50 pounds. But then when I purchased a switching power supply later in years, it probably weighs about as much as the radio. So that's the question. What is the primary reason that a high-frequency switching-type high-voltage power supply can be both less expensive and lighter in weight than a conventional power supply? The correct answer on our page is letter C. The high-voltage frequency inverter design uses much smaller transformers and filter components for an equivalent power output. Let me let it break. The answer here answers it all. The switching power supply works at a higher frequency, therefore making the component smaller. The overall weight becomes less than a conventional linear supply, and everything becomes cheaper. The downside is they are an engineering nightmare to repair. So, any questions or comments on that particular question?
This is KD0CDQ with a comment on it. Yes, I too use a switching power supply. I have a Go Kit. So the Go Kit, I don't want it to get super heavy. And what I like about the switching supply that I purchased, it has a control to control how much voltage I'm actually using. And it goes all the way from somewhere to 6 all the way to 14. So I can make an adjustment on that in case I'm in the field and I've got, I'm not coming from a good outlet, say, you know, maybe I've noticed some outlets will put 9 point something, some will put 10.3 volts, some will put 10.6. Voltage varies. So when I'm in the field and I'm using an outlet that I don't know anything about, I may plug into it and I may have to adjust my switching power supply to put the 12 volt or a little bit more than 12 volt into my radio so that it'll operate. So these switching power supplies are great, the new ones. And I'd also recommend if you buy one, get one with a meter on it. I won't mention the brand, but I like the meter, although the salesman said you don't need it. I didn't make any comment back to him because in my mind's eye, it's nice to have. Okay, does anybody have any comment? I see that Diana disconnected, reconnected, and still can't understand. Hopefully the tape turns out okay. There's a comment in the comment box. I don't know. We might be breaking up somehow to her, but everyone sounds good to us, Diana, that we've been speaking with. Anybody have any comments on that question? And then Rick has another question. So if you got a question, go ahead with it, and then Rick will come back.
All right. I'm currently sitting in the parking lot getting ready for a ham club meeting to start, and we got all kinds of noises around. All right, my next question is Echo 7 Delta 14, E7B14. What is the one purpose of a bleeder resistor in a conventional unregulated power supply? What is the one purpose of a bleeder resistor in a conventional unregulated power supply? The answer on our page is C, to improve output voltage regulation. Well, as far as the statements were made, the answer is correct, but in our opinion, does not go far enough. And I have to give credit where credit's due. This is Gordon's opinion. The bleeder resistor also depletes the voltage stored in the capacitors after the supply is turned off. An excellent safety feature. Also, if the resistor is of the slider type, a second voltage can be obtained to supply something like your screen grid needs. So there's a definite need for this. Let me repeat that because it might have a little more meaning the second time around. The bleeder resistor also depletes the voltage stored in the capacitors after the supply is turned off. An excellent safety feature. Also, if the resistor is of the slider type, a second voltage can be obtained to supply something like your screen grid needs. All right, are there any questions or comments on this one? Well, I heard somebody trying to come through, but I never really heard it. So maybe the person having trouble understanding means that She understands the subject matter, but is having a hard time understanding the transmissions. Is that a possibility? Mike, come back.
Yes, on that second indication, I gather she's not hearing it clearly. I'll have to ask Gordon how I can download. I recorded this session, how I can download this, because Diana lives in the same basic community that I live in, the same county anyway. I may be able to just email it to her when we're done here. Gordon will explain to me how to get it out of the machine. Yeah, that's probably it. And who was trying to come in was actually KV4QY, Rebecca and Jim were trying to come in. They tried it earlier and I heard the same noise. Okay, I'm letting it drop and then I'm going to give us some information for next session. First off, I want to thank Rick. I realize that he's been traveling. He lives in Illinois, but he's in Texas visiting his family, so he's on the road again. So it's a little difficult to operate when you're not at home with everything that you're used to. But next Sunday and Wednesday, we're going to have Rebecca, who is KV4QX, and James, KV4QY, from Franklin, Georgia. They will be the two instructors this coming week, as I gather here. So I think they've been trying to come aboard. I don't know. I'm going to give it a moment again. I think is it James? Are you trying to come aboard? Try again. You haven't been breaking. All I've been seeing is catching a high-pitched squeal, but I'm not hearing you. You want to try it again? Over. All I'm getting is a noise. I'm not getting the transmission. Want to try it again? Or maybe that time it might have been Rick, N1VXP. Was that you, Rick, in Ohio? Over.
Oh, N1VXP, you caught me kind of guessing. It wasn't me.
Yes, I think it's Jim. We have to work on getting that connection going better. Okay, we've gone through the questions, and as Kathy said, we've done eight sessions, and we've got four more to go. And after I shut down the recording, I'm gonna find out, Diana, for you how I can get this recording to you that I've saved on my machine to see if I can just email it to you somehow or other. Okay, if anybody has any questions up to this point, please go ahead now. And remember, let's start hitting those tests on QRZ.com where it says a ham test. Get into them. Start drilling yourself. With some of this material may be hard to, the questions and answers are so long that it may be kind of tricky, but get used to the right answer. Anybody have any comments before we turn off the recording? Over. Okay, let's give Gordon a few moments where he can turn off his recording and I will turn off my recording at the same time. So we have to be in a quiet stage. So be quiet and Gordon will come aboard and tell us when he's turned off. Over.
Okay, thanks Mike and thank you Rick. All stations stand by, please, KY6V.
This has been the South Cars Outreach Program. Join us again next time for another in our series of training sessions for amateur radio operators. Goodbye for now.